This morning we have got Tim Buchanan on the line from Newcastle, and Tim is the Newcastle Uni Students Association Enviro Officer or Enviro Convener, and is also a Communications Officer for the Australian Student Environment Network. Welcome, Tim.
Hey, how you doing? Good morning.
Yeah, good. You participated in a protest in Newcastle last Sunday organised by Greenpeace, where a massive banner reading "Combank's coal kills" was unfurled on top of a coal stockpile. Can you put us in the driver's seat and talk us through that protest?
The protest was aimed at Combank because they're the biggest funders of fossil fuel in Australia by far. But what the action looks like is that we arrived in the morning, we got over the fence, we dragged some very, very, very massive banners up a coal pile and unfurled them as a helicopter went over and got some shots. And then a few of us occupied a claimer stacker, which are the big toothy-looking things that move the coal around, and we did some live streaming and just talking about Combank and how that sort of stuff works and the funding regime of fossil fuels in Australia. I mean, that was our aim to talk about that.
Yeah, wicked. Yeah, and it was a massive banner. This is like 80 metres long or something.
Yeah, there was about 75 metres by 30 metres, which is definitely the biggest banner I've ever had to deal with. Shout out to everyone who was involved in the making of that banner, but also the logistics of getting it up a coal pile and then managing to unfurl it in the correct way. And we had to change a few things around on the fly. So the teamwork that was needed for that was pretty high order, and it was a lot of people who hadn't worked together before. So shout outs to all the people that were on top of that coal pile.
Yeah, we are. And yeah, pretty sophisticated activism there. Greenpeace were the lead organisers of that protest. Were there other groups or people from other environmental and community organisations involved in making that happen?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Greenpeace were the main organisers, but the local group Climate Justice Uprising Newcastle was pretty much very involved, and the University of Newcastle Enviro Collective. I guess those three groups came together where GEP maybe did the high order stuff, but opened it up to what local groups wanted to do and let it, it got shaped a bit in that way. So that's good. That's a sort of a new direction for Greenpeace. So we're happy to see where Greenpeace go in the future. I think they're being a lot more inclusive and doing a lot more actions than they have done in the last decade. So it was a consultative process, and that's nice to see.
Yeah, excellent. Now, what do you reckon of the strengths and also potentially the limitations of pressuring the banks around coal investment?
I think the strengths, first off, are it's accessible. It's a large support foundation. Usually blockading is the way to go. You're actually at a mine site. You're stopping construction, stopping coal getting from A to B, stopping washeries. But sometimes those things, those infrastructures are huge, and it takes a lot of work to actually physically stop coal being moved around and earth being dug out of the ground and country being destroyed. So the advantage of tackling the banks is that it can be distributed, and I think we've seen this distributed action with Westpac. They were pressured quite hard on Adani, and they basically said they're not going to fund any new coal mines in any new coal basin. So they will probably still continue to fund coal mines in the Hunter because there's already coal mines there, but they've actually come out with a statement and said they're not going to be involved in any new coal basins. So that essentially rules out new coal mines, which is awesome. Combank, not so much. They have no real climate policy. So the advantage there is we're ripping the money out of the guts of the industry, or trying to. The disadvantage is, I guess, it's a sort of a slightly inside track, not particularly, but it's not. The power is still basically driven to CommBank to make the right decision. I mean, it's community pressure, but we're still relying on CommBank to make that correct decision. And I guess in a capital framework, you could critique that quite heavily. It's what we have access to now, and if the banks do budge, that would be great. But they're not doing it of their own volition. You know, I think that's the issue with the banks. They're not ethical, even though they say they are. They do things for their own profit line. So that's what we're damaging. They're not doing it because they're great. They're a great institution.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, just one kind of comment I want to make that you'll probably want to respond to is one of the things I think with these divestment campaigns, especially with the it was quite apparent to me when Westpac recently kind of made it clear that they would divest from giving any money to, you know, the Adani coal mine. But, of course, on a radio interview, you know, one of the CEO or someone high up in Westpac, you know, basically said, oh, well, we're not ruling out, you know, funding other coal mines in the future. And, you know, one of the things I think the campaign has to go towards is actually trying to pressure the bank to, you know, to make a commitment that they will not give any money to coal mines whatsoever. And in terms of the Adani campaign, for example, the problem with its focus, it's being focused on stopping, you know, the banks giving money to the Adani coal mine, but not actually raising that question that, you know, no coal mines should be given money to by any of these major banks.
Absolutely, and that's why the focus of this was not Adani at all. We wanted to focus on the fact that CommBank is like the biggest financial pillar, has given close to $4 billion to the coal and fossil fuel industry since signing of the Paris Agreement alone. They put more money into coal more than the second and third banks combined. So that's the pressure, is like, hey, they are the bedrock, basically, for Australia's coal industry. They invest massively and enable the industry to continue and to continue to expand. So that's why we focus broader, like a broader message. But as you said, you know, it's relying on the banks to make some sort of like ethical sort of decision, and we know they're not particularly deep down ethical institutions. So it's a concern, but I guess this is sort of like being involved in reformist style actions is not a terrible thing, and this may be a step towards banks not funding any new coal mines, but we'll have to see what the future holds. I think you know, diversity of tactics is a good way to look at it. I'll be involved in divestment campaigns, but I'll also be involved in harder campaigns as well.
Yeah. Now, what's your vision, Tim, for Newcastle and the Hunter, and I guess Australia more generally over the next decade? Do you think community action can really drive a transition away from coal, and what would that look like?
Yeah. I mean, I really do think community action can drive us away from abusive extraction industries. We've seen some massive wins in the last few years. We've had the Bentley win and the massive campaign against coal seam gas. We're quite lucky in Australia that we're a little bit behind America, and we have all this evidence of the devastating effect of coal seam gas, not only on the land. Unfortunately, it sells a lot more when the human health impact is quite apparent. And so that's what happened with CSG. Like, people, it gets put in communities, people become sick. So we've had massive wins against coal seam gas. Coal seam gas doesn't really have much of a social life in Australia, and it's struggling, and it's popping up here and there, and we still need help to definitely, you know, kill that beast. But we've seen wins there. I think we're seeing community pressure really be successful with distributed bank action. I'm excited to see how this mode works, because the different modes of, hey, we need to get to bush blockade, which is fine and good. It's very taxing on people, and maybe, like, we need to get 10,000 people in the street. Those things are very hard, but the distributed actions, where there might be 10,000 people taking action, but, you know, knitting nanas are occupying an ATM in Gosford. I'm excited by this new like very autonomous community action that people have been taking. So I think there's great potential. I don't know if I'm in a bubble, but I see it growing quite rapidly. That's how I perceive it.
Mm.
And the future to me looks like in the Hunter is like I think we need to engage a lot more with unions and workers. It's not something that the environment movement does very well. It's something that we're very critical of ourselves at the moment.
Hmm.
People who are trying to, you know, stop climate change in the Hunter really need to communicate to working class communities what the solutions are. We are looking at like just transition models. We are trying to really communicate the evidence. Like there's vast quantities of evidence and reporting done on how actually a just transitions model could work in the Hunter.
Hmm.
If you want to Google Just Transitions Hunter, there's like a report, I think it's like a couple of hundred pages, talking about how, you know, solar farms, they often do need quite a lot of land. They're quite big, but we have all these like really big holes in the ground. We have quite a lot of dead land in the Hunter due to mining, and that sort of land could be reclaimed for renewables quite easily. And it would require, you know, lots of construction and a lot of IT work. All those sort of jobs that are in mining are absolutely in a renewable sector.
Mm.
So it's interesting to think about that, but when we don't communicate it too well, and we need to start focusing on that. And I think as young people, young environmentalists are really sort of getting involved in union. Yeah, well, getting involved in union movements and trying to make those connections again. So
yeah, that's wicked. And how are things on campus at the moment? Because it looks like there's been a bit of a resurgence in on-campus campaigning. I know I saw on social media a protest at the Commonwealth Bank branch on campus looking again at this question of their investments in coal. And we just heard before we got you on the line about the successful campaign to force UON, University of Newcastle, to cut ties with Broad Spectrum, which is involved in running the refugee gulags.
Yes, absolutely. So there has been a resurgence. Students at the University of Newcastle, through groups like Students Against Detention and the Enviro Collective, have just been stepping up massively. We occupied the Commonwealth Bank, or out the front of it, we did like a soft block, you know, sitting down, sort of blocking the bank. You know, if people really wanted to enter, we weren't. It wasn't like a hard block, but basically they did the work for us because they just shut the bank for about 3 hours. So that was great. And it sort of, there's a lot of people who have never experienced direct action sort of protesting, and we're trying to really expand what the idea of direct action is on campus as well. So we obviously do like bank blockades and stuff like that, but also we run Food Not Bombs in town. We're feeding people. We're doing community gardening, like expanding the idea of what direct action is. It's not just protesting. It's actually building structures that are sustainable and non-institutionalized and community run. So that sort of stuff has been going pretty well. And the Broad Spectrum thing is amazing. I don't really know. Like, having a win is really weird sometimes. Newcastle had an $88 million contract with Broad Spectrum.
Mm.
As you said, the same company that run Neural and Manus, and they terminated that contract 3 years early. And we've been like slamming them hard, solidly for a year, and the campaign like grew maybe sort of 6 months before that.
Congratulations! That's really great work from Students Against Detention.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really, really proud of the crew who put in a lot of work to it. So, yeah. But we've got some more stuff coming up in Newcastle, like the Students of Sustainability Conference and all that sort of stuff. Do you want me to have a chat about that?
Yeah, for sure. Tell us a bit about SOS.
So SOS is Australia's longest running and sort of largest grassroots, I hate to use the activist word, but activist sort of space. It's totally about accessibility and knowledge sharing. It's happening in Newcastle this year from the 30th of June till the 5th of July. It looks like 5 days of 8 different continuous streams going on at the same time of skill sharing and learning about campaigns. The focus has shifted over from the last decade in and I'll just use my own terminology, from like it shifted from crystal hippie to now like a real push for intersectionality, without just using that as a buzzword, but like, you know, we're having a whole day focused on just transitions. We're getting union heads from all around the country to talk to us about what that looks like. You know, we're flying in First Nations elders from all across the country and their countries to talk about the fight from their lens, so we can listen to them, see what they want us to do in their campaigns. That might just be sharing the story or whatever. It's all about getting people who are on the front line to come and talk to us in Newcastle. And also like the 101s, like, you know, what is direct action? What's anarchism 101, feminism 101, capitalism 101, all that sort of stuff. So there's sort of like multiple levels of experience. Everyone's welcome. It's not just for students. That's the common misconception. And we are really trying to, in Newcastle this year, trying to get away from the middle class white student bubble, because Newcastle is, you know, pretty working class. So we're having it at a TAFE this year. There's a lot of high school students coming, and there's a lot of, you know, people who are older coming as well. So we're really putting that effort into broadening the base. And everyone's a student of sustainability if they want to be. Also, just like to mention that we have a no borders, no barriers policy on ticket prices. So if you can afford 50 cents for your ticket, just email us and tell us that, and that's what your ticket cost will be. So
yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Very nice. All right. Well, that sounds very exciting. Looks like you've got a really good, a good conscious approach to, as you say, building a broadly based SOS and involving, yeah, different groups that are all kind of tangentially related to environmental struggles. So, top stuff. Hopefully, there's a bunch of Melbourne people coming up your way.
I think there will be. And I just mentioned SOS is also like a broad social justice. It's not just environmentalism. Everything's interrelated. So, come along. It should be pretty good. And we're trying to do good things, but also we're very open to critique. That's very important. So,
yeah, for sure.
If someone has a critique of SOS, let us know and we'll take that on board.
For sure. Bit of a constructive discussion. All right. Thanks heaps for talking with us, Tim, and keep up the good work. It's really exciting as a former Nova Castrian watching all this staunch action taking place up there. So rock on, sir.
You.
All right.
All right.
Talk to you again soon. Bye.
Thank you.